This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is an edited recording of the panel discussion that was held at the BFM Health and Living Junior event on November 13th. BFM Health and Living Junior is presented by Nippon Paint, the coating expert.
Okay, our next session is about infections, essentially. That's what we're talking about, hence Battle of the Bugs. So I have two of the best. Right here, we have Dr. Christopher Lee, who is the head and senior consultant infectious diseases specialist at Hospital Sungai Buloh. And then we have Dr. Zulkifli Ismail, consultant pediatrician and pediatric cardiologist, our second for the day, who is working at KPJ. And we're going to be talking again, same rules apply. Questions will be open throughout, so get them ready. And if possible, keep them short because we are running a slightly shorter session this time around. For both of you, what diseases do you tend to see when it comes to children in your practices? Dr. Zul, I guess I'll start with you because you see children.
Thank you. Well, usually the main diseases that we see are the usual fever, cough and cold, and then, of course, diarrhea and respiratory problems. These are three main problems that affect children.
Dr. Lee?
Well, number one, I don't see children. But certainly in the younger population, the young adults, the teenagers, the most common probably will be upper respiratory tract infections. And I think that's, we know that looking at our national data, that's where most of the antibiotics are used in the primary care or clinic setting. So I think we should probably will be looking at that particularly harder in terms of the way we use antibiotics.
Can we also talk a little bit about how our immunity is developed? Every time we open the floor to talk about infectious diseases, we always end up talking about people asking how to boost immunity, people taking things to boost said immunity. I'm sure you both have heard this a lot as well. How is immunity developed and can it be boosted?
When the baby is born, the baby is born with some immunity that's transferred from the mother to the placenta. That immunity, actually, that amount of antibodies will actually start getting depleted. So by about 9 months or 6 months, there'll be no more of mother's antibodies. So the baby starts to build up its own immunity. And the baby builds up its own immunity based on the diet that you give the child, based on what kind of antigens the baby is exposed to, and slowly he will develop his own immunity. Whether there is a place for giving things that actually boost the immunity or not, most of us grew up without taking anything that actually needed to boost our immunity. So, you know, giving probiotics and all that, that's all not really scientifically proven. But it makes parents feel happy that they're giving something. So, basically, you boost your immunity by giving appropriate diet, a balanced diet, and letting the child get exposed to anything that provided it doesn't get very ill.
What is the difference between a viral and a bacterial infection? Because, Dr. Zul, earlier when you talked about things like the sniffles, cough and cold, fever, those can be things on their own. They can also be significant because they could be symptoms of something else. How do we know when what we're facing is viral or bacterial?
Basically, most of the infections that we get are viral infections. However, if you have a fever or infection for like an extended period of time, say more than 3 days or more than 5 days, then you have to consider, is there a secondary bacterial infection in it? So, but there are certain infections where you have specific signs and symptoms that we can look for, and those are the ones that we need to look for and treat. But basically, viral infections, you don't need to give any antibiotics because nothing will kill the virus. Bacterial infections, you need to give them antibiotics.
Just one word about the immunity that you mentioned just now in terms of boosting. Besides what Zul has mentioned just now, I think all the parents here, we must not forget vaccination. And I think that's something we must make sure our kids get all the vaccinations that they need. I won't go into that any further, but that's a different topic completely. But when it comes to bacteria and viruses, I think in particularly important we'll be looking at infections of the upper respiratory tract. As I mentioned just now, I keep on harping about that because I think kids and even young adults, all of us, the most common reason we end up to a GP is probably because of upper respiratory tract infections. And most URTIs for short, are due to viruses, as high as 90% in some studies. So most of the time, if you end up giving antibiotics for a URTI, we are getting it wrong, just looking at the odds. Of course, there are some clinical clues, and there are some tests now, some rapid tests or throat swabs they can use to help us make a diagnosis of bacteria versus viruses. And that distinction is important, exactly what Zoe mentioned just now. Targeted treatment with antibiotics for bacterial infection may be helpful for some patients, but if we use antibiotics for viral infections, number one, we are doing no favor to the kid or to the patient, and number two, we are doing harm. I'm going to do a bit of advertisement. BFM will get angry with me. This coming week is the Antibiotic Awareness Week sponsored by WHO. So every year during this time, we go around the country. You'll be hearing us, I think the minister spoke about it this morning as well, about the misuse of antibiotics. So I think that is an important distinction to make in the clinical setting for children.
I'm just going to add an ad on top of Dr. Christopher's ad. We did a show on this actually last Friday, so you can check that out on bfm.my. But very quickly, when it comes to antibiotics, I think many of us come from a very antibiotic-friendly generation in that we're accustomed to going to the doctor, and if you don't leave with that packet being told, finish it, you don't feel as if you accomplished anything. What is a healthy way for parents to engage in an antibiotic yes or no conversation with a doctor?
I'm a lousy parent, so I'm very worried about answering this question. But I think looking at it in a general sense, not specifically for peds, we want people, both the practitioner and the person getting the treatment, i.e. either the child or the patient himself, to ask that question, do we need antibiotics? We want also the doctor to be having that thought process as he considers whether he wants to give antibiotics or not. We trust most doctors, my colleagues, my friends out there who are in the private practice, in general practice, to be thinking about whether they are doing more harm versus good. And that's always one of the mantra of any doctor. So we have to balance the pros and the cons. We need to look at some clinical clues and to see whether this is likely to be an infection versus from bacteria versus viral. I'm looking at sore throat in particular. There are certain clinical scores that you can use, and most doctors are trained to consider that. As I mentioned, there are also some tests you can use to help you decide whether it's bacteria or viruses. This may add to the cost of the treatment, obviously, but well, taking antibiotics unnecessarily is certainly not a good thing to do. So we want the doctors to start thinking like this, but we also want to empower all patients, all consumers. When the doctor says, I would like to start you on antibiotics, I hope everyone, and the Minister of Health is very keen to support this, to ask that one question. Antibiotic peluka, do we need it? That's all. Ask your doctor whether you need that antibiotic, and make the doctor, if your doctor hasn't thought it through, perhaps by asking that question will make your doctor think it through better. Doctors are just like anybody else. We think of many things. As we are talking to you, we are thinking of many other things. You know, that's unfortunately, that's how it is. But bring that conversation into that consultation.
I agree with that. And I think most parents, or actually all parents, should actually keep that in mind, because most parents expect that their child will be given antibiotics, and a lot of them want it. So, but you know, it's only if the child is extremely ill, or you've got a fever that's been there for about 5 days or so, and then after you've done an adequate blood test, and if you've justified it. I mean, most of the time, I personally have to justify that I want to give the antibiotic, which is what exactly Chris has said. So we want the doctors also, all doctors actually, to start thinking that way. And we hope that parents will also ask the doctors to justify giving them antibiotics rather than asking for it.
We have a lot of different headlines to kind of go through, because it's been not such a good year for infectious diseases when it comes to kids. We've seen measles outbreaks here as well as abroad. But one thing that we also see every year, and that we saw this, is hand, foot and mouth, which seems to now have periodic outbreaks, especially among our school-going children. How do we manage that? I mean, as parents, there's always that concern.
Basically, hand, foot and mouth disease has been here for a long time. it hasn't been brought in the forefront until that outbreak of hand foot mouth with the encephalitis in Sarawak, and since then it has been made a notifiable disease by the Ministry of Health. So you know, usually the child will have, there's an incubation period obviously of about 3 to 5 days. During that 3 to 5 days, the child can actually infect other children, and once they have the infection, you don't need to give antibiotics, and the management is basically ensuring that the child gets enough intake. So if the child does not eat because of the ulcers and all that, then that child needs to be admitted or need to have some other therapy. And the important thing is not to send your child to the daycare or to kindergarten when he or she has got that the infection, because that will spread very fast within that school.
Well, generally speaking, it's not just hand, foot and mouth that scares us. You know, we always get these breakouts of things like diphtheria this year, for example. We also have had the H5N1s, the H1N1s, these things that kind of hit headlines, and then people are watching the numbers go up of infections every day, getting more and more frightened. How should parents cope with these sorts of headlines? When they read these headlines and they get scared, what are the things to keep in mind about how to keep your children safe from these infections?
The same way that Mira handled that Zika question. Things are highlighted in the media, but it doesn't mean that parents have to get very uptight about it. I mean, you've got flu, you've got diphtheria and all that, but it doesn't mean that every time the child coughs, you think the child has got diphtheria. And that's what happened during that outbreak. During that outbreak also, we had, you know, we have vaccines for children for diphtheria, right, the TP, but we also have vaccines for adults, the Tdap vaccine, also to prevent for tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis. And that vaccine has been sold out, all because we had a diphtheria outbreak. And now parents are asking me for it, and I can't give it. So, you know, the way to handle it is actually to look to see whether there's any you know, it's whether it is hyped up, and number one, and number two is you just have to take precautions and make sure that your child doesn't get it. You've got vaccines that are available that can prevent diphtheria. You've got vaccines that are available that can prevent measles. You've got vaccines that are available that can prevent influenza. So these things should be given, and you should ask your doctor and talk to your doctors about it. And then, obviously, if you hear something, if you read something in the newspapers or hear something on TV or on social media, it'd be a good idea to come up to your doctors or to contact Chris and ask him, you know, is this true?
Did you have anything to add, Dr. Christopher, to that?
I got the mic as well. At home, I can't talk. Right. I think you mentioned just now about what can parents do at schools. I think something besides when we send our kids to the Tadikas or Taskas and Montessori and non-Montessori kindergartens, besides looking at the academic, I think we freak out over the academic achievements at 6 years old, but nonetheless, besides looking at that, how qualified are the teachers, I think all parents should empower themselves to ask a few standard hygienic questions. How do you ensure that outbreaks like hand, foot and mouth don't start in your center? What do you all do? Is there a routine that you have? Do you have a guideline? Do your teachers know what to do? Do they check every morning a roll call to check whether kids there may not be well? Because when you first get hand, foot and mouth, initially the kids feel pretty okay. They're not, blah, you know? So are those standards put in those kindergartens? And those are some safety things you should consider. Do you teach your kids about hygiene? And that's important. Look, I think what happened after SARS, Hong Kong and Singapore changed tremendously because of SARS. They do not want to go back there again. So hand hygiene improved. Look at the toilets, public toilets in Hong Kong. And I'm sure many of you have been to Hong Kong before and after SARS. Tremendously has changed. Tremendously. I go to Hong Kong just to visit the toilet now. Wow, you know, you go in there, you don't want to come out. Okay, don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. Now I got myself in trouble. But jokes aside, seriously, they have improved. And I think here, after having gone through some missed close calls in our own country, I think these are things we should push to, for improvement. I think we can become very paranoid. Like now, no one wants to walk on the carpet anymore, I noticed. Thanks to Jesse there, I know that we'll be jumping over each other. But we can take a much more pragmatic approach to it, meaning teaching our kids basic hygiene skills. And these are skills. How do you cough? When you're having a flu-like illness, don't go to school. Things like that. I think that gradually will help. Otherwise, we become paralyzed. And unfortunately, you mentioned all the alphabets between H and N. We know there'll be more to come, unfortunately.
What are the bugs that, in your view, are just common and unavoidable? You know, linking up to our earlier session about when parents might be overreacting, when are they not? What should we just accept? Look, if I have a child and they're going to go to school, these are the things that will happen, and it's not that big a deal.
When a child goes to school, obviously he's going to be exposed to bugs, and he's going to be exposed to other children who are sick. So you can expect that the child will have a cough and cold, he will come back with fever, he will have a bit of sore throat, a bit of runny nose and red eyes and all that. That's expected. But those things should usually not last more than about three days or so. If it extends beyond that, obviously you have to see a doctor. And, you know, there are home remedies that you can actually give to children. So you can expect that to happen in children who go to school. It happens in some children more than others. But if you give the child adequate nutrition, you give the child adequate activities, you give the child adequate exposure to sunshine, should be all right.
Okay, and now any questions from the floor? Just a quick PSA for each other. If you can keep the question short, that'll be fantastic.
Oh, I forgot, and vaccinated.
Vaccinate. Yes. Over there in the corner.
Good afternoon, Dato and Doctor. I have a 5-month-old baby, and yesterday had a rash on her hand. Took her to the PET, and he diagnosed her with early stage of eczema. So the question is, he gave a solution, three solutions. One is DHA, probiotics, and a steroid-based cream. I'm okay with the first two. I'm not too sure about the steroid-based cream because of her age, you see. So what is your opinion? Thanks.
Well, if it's just eczema, you can just give an ordinary cream, a moisturizing cream, and all that should be okay, provided the diagnosis is right. I don't know, that's a personal consultation. You can talk to us later. There are three pediatricians here. We'll talk to you later.
There's a question over there.
Hello. My question is about the antibiotic. We have been, in our generation, we have been taking antibiotics for such a long years. After all, recently I heard antibiotic is not good for health. But as I know, antibiotic is to cure the what I call the virus, is it? Is that take too much of antibiotic will spoil our organ? I'm a bit confused.
Thank you. So I guess the question here is, are antibiotics good for our health?
Antibiotics, obviously, I think it was one of the miracles of modern medicine. And every doctor here will say without antibiotics, many of us here may not be alive today. But the problem that we are facing now is antibiotic resistance. A lot of the medicines that used to work before is not working now. If this sounds like an advertisement, it is, okay? We really have lost a lot of the antibiotics. A lot of the drugs that maybe Dr. Zul and myself use, we are very careful using it now because it may not work anymore. In Malaysia, when we look at our yearly returns in terms of our antibiotic resistance, unfortunately, everything is moving in the wrong direction. Everything is going up. And therefore, these antibiotics don't work as well as before. So now, we are telling everyone to be careful with the usage of antibiotics because if we use less, the resistance may drop. We are trying to now preserve this very precious resource that we have. So while antibiotics work on certain bacteria that you may have causing that infection, if you overuse it, you will develop resistance. Now, recently, 1 year ago actually, and this year as well, we have picked up a new gene causing resistance to a very important drug that we need in all our ICUs, whether you're from UM or YHKL or Sungai Buloh or even in KBJ. Many of our patients may need this very important antibiotic called colistin. Unfortunately, in Malaysia, we are now having resistance to colistin. So our high-end top gun, if you like, in the ICU, we are beginning to lose it. Now, this is just one example how desperate things are. So in many of the ICUs we have in our country, all the intensivists can tell you stories where we have a patient infected by certain bugs that are resistant to everything under the sun, and we feel so helpless because there's nothing more that we can do for that patient. Really in the hands of God. Now, it's not doom and gloom yet, because there's still things we can do to try to reverse it, but it is already happening in Malaysia. So these are important. So your question just now, use antibiotics only when you have to, if it involves a bacterial infection. If you do not have a bacterial infection, do not use antibiotics. Ask your doctor, do I need that antibiotic? All right, and you need to be empowered to do so. Ask that, all right? I think it's perfectly legitimate question to ask your practitioner. I hope that helped a little bit.
And the last question over there.
Doctor, there's a rising of the anti-vaccine group nowadays that we can see. I just need to know what are the impacts to our society, with especially our children playing with their children. Is there a serious matters that we should look at?
So I guess here we're talking about herd immunity in part as well.
Yeah, we're talking, yeah. I think you are right. There is a worrying trend of anti-vaccine lobbies. And this is affecting parents who are vaccine hesitant. They are hesitant about vaccinating, and then they turn to become vaccine refusers. I think there is a danger, because you have to have a certain amount of uptake of the vaccine. You must have, say, more than 85%. Of the population vaccinated, so that for measles, say, you need to have more than 85% of the population vaccinated so that you can have immunity for the whole community. And if you have one person who's not vaccinated and gets infected, that person can then really put the others at risk. And this is how in Australia, they're actually implementing this, so that if you have a child who's not vaccinated, then you're restricted from going to certain schools and all that. And I have been trying to work with the Ministry of Health. There is a website there is a program that we actually run with the Ministry of Health, the Malaysian Pediatric Association. We run with the Ministry of Health. It's called Immunize for Life. And if you're on the website, or if you're on the net, you can go to www.ifl.my, and that will take you to, and that website will give you things about all about vaccines, and will tell you about the vaccine preventable diseases. So to give a short answer to your question, yes, there is a risk that unvaccinated children will bring diseases back to the community, and that has already happened with measles. It's happened with diphtheria. It will happen with others as long as we have a loud anti-vaccine voice. I'm not saying it's a loud voice, but it's a small number of people, but it's a loud voice, and it's influencing so many people on social media, and that is worrying enough for the Ministry of Health to actually work with the Malaysian Pediatric Association and the Malaysian Society for Infectious Disease and Chemotherapy to start the program in 2013.
Okay, thank you both very much. To summarise then, vaccinate and ask whether you need antibiotics. They're still useful, but do ask and have that conversation with your doctor. Doctors, thank you very much for coming up.
Thank you.
This is an edited recording of the panel discussion that was held at the BFM Health and Living Junior event on November 13th. BFM Health and Living Junior is presented by Nippon Paint, the coating expert.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.